Chapter 2, December 6th, The Last Good Night of Wiley Dale. Wiley Dale tried to stop shaking, could not. He thought he might be more scared right now than he had ever been in his life. He was exhausted. His story had been running through his mind like some kind of out-of-control hallucination, and he thought that it was not a story. It was real. This was because of the fact that he'd been unable to stop his hands from hitting the keys. He'd watched them like an outsider, no control. At least, they were no longer moving. He glanced over at the clock.
Holy shit!
What? Came Brooke's sleepy voice from the bedroom.
I'll be there in a sec.
Wiley had been in front of his laptop writing for an incredible 16 hours. He knew what had been written, but not as if he had been the author. It wasn't creation, it was transcription. He wasn't creating a novel, he was writing a history, and it was a very scary history, and he was afraid it was real, and it wasn't just a history, it was a warning. He turned on the little TV set that sat on the corner of his desk. He watched Fox News for a while, then went up to MSNBC, then back down to CNN. Just more of the usual bullshit. An actor gunned down by a posse of outraged fans, a combination hailstorm, tornado, and flood that seemed to have flattened every trailer park in Arkansas. The European empires were gone, and there was nothing about any weird lenses coming up out of the ground anywhere at all, and certainly not under the Great Pyramid. He flipped through what he'd written, and found over 50 pages. What the hell? You don't write like this. Nobody does. What in God's name had happened to him? It's hard to create fiction. It takes hours sometimes to get a single sentence out. His damn knuckles hurt from the pounding. He read more. If this wasn't fiction, then what was it? There was no President Wade. There was only one moon in the sky, and there was certainly no czar. This was reality from a parallel universe, somehow bleeding over into a susceptible mind. His. The creatures he'd seen in his woods 5 years ago, the subject of his notorious book Alien Days, had been scaly, and Martin had described the ancient biblical Nephilim as having a reptilian appearance. There was nothing like that in our Bible. But he'd certainly seen scaly faces, right here in these woods, not a quarter of a mile from here. Brooke slipped into the room and put her hand on his cheek.
Wiley, it's time to come to bed.
The spell broke, and his body took over. It had been in this chair for a damn long time, and there was a bladder involved, and the bladder had just come to its senses. He ran like hell.
Wiley!
He hit the john just in time and opened up. Thank you, God. She followed him in.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing now.
You've been in there since breakfast. Do you realize that?
He finished his business, opened the medicine cabinet, and drank a couple of slugs of Mylanta, chased it with Pepto-Bismol.
Nectar of the gods, he said.
It's late. It's time to go to bed.
She caressed him from behind.
I need a breath of air. I'm going to take a walk.
The book is making you crazy.
No.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not ready to go through that again, Wiley. That alien book, that was enough for one lifetime.
She referred, of course, to the hated Alien Days. He hated it, too, for that matter. It wasn't fun being a laughingstock.
The book I'm writing is not about aliens.
I know you, Wiley Dale. It's about something weird, or you wouldn't be so crazed. No more saucer crap. That's bedrock, boy.
It isn't about aliens, and neither was the other book. I only thought it was.
Alien Days was about a writer being very crazy in public. Embarrassment. That's what it was about.
There are no aliens.
At last, he faces the truth.
What's happening is much stranger than the arrival of aliens from another planet. And this book, it's... wow! It's possessing me.
You write fiction that you come to believe is real, and in the process you drive this entire family crazy. And I'm sorry, no more. Brooke, no more. End of story. Books that possess you, that drive you nuts. No, I'm finished. I've had it. Mom? Dad?
Nicholas appeared, looking bleary and pissed off. Wonderful, Wiley said. Brooke said to her son,
Dad has a sour stomach. You're fighting.
I love your mom too much to fight with her. I just obey.
He made a steeple of his hands and bowed toward her.
Except you don't, Daddy.
Now Kelsey had arrived, his gorgeous little girl.
He has cigars hidden in the woods.
That is not true.
Brooke folded her arms. So did Kelsey. Brooke glared.
The aliens you go looking for in the woods, Wiley Dale, would they be from Cuba?
The cigars are Matt's, he said.
And he's out there right now, isn't he? Smoking a Monty and sucking on a bottle of Beam, and that's the real reason you want to take a walk, to make yourself sick on cigars and hooch.
Cubans are the best cigars in the world.
You're coming to bed with me, and scoot, you two. The Sandman's going to be furious.
I'm past the Sandman, Nick said.
I'm not, Kelsey told him. I'm just a little girl, and I still believe.
Meaning, don't rain on your sister's parade.
No, sir.
Wiley went into the bedroom and fished his flashlight out from under the bed where he kept it alongside his shotgun.
I need some space, hon. This thing I'm writing, it's getting to me for sure, and I agree with you. We need that not to happen. It's about us and about people who live in another version of this house in a parallel universe. I think that's what it's about, anyway. I'm sort of more of a reader than a writer here. Reading as my fingers write, as it were.
About us in what sense?
Well, like this conversation. This will be in the book, because we're part of the story somehow. I'm not sure how yet, but we're part of it.
Not our names again.
Uh-oh. He had to tread carefully here.
Well, the people in the parallel universe aren't us. They have different names. They live in their version of this house, and the town is called Harrow, too, but the people are not the same.
I am so tired of this.
Whoa, slow down. The parallel universe is obviously different. Their McDonald's has emerald arches. Their Target is blue. The president's named James Hanna Wade, and the family's named Winters. We're the Dales, if you hadn't noticed. And here, McDonald's has golden arches, obviously. Plus, there is no British Empire, among numerous other things. They have two small moons, rather than one large one.
In the part of it that's set in our universe, what are the characters' names?
She knew him well, and she was not dumb, far from dumb.
Well, of course, I'm using ours.
No!
Well, it's us. They're us.
My kids' names will not be in another one of your books. You know what Nicholas said? He said you really are the most embarrassing father in the world, and he was right. Saying you were taken aboard a UFO was bad enough, but you included him when he was all of 7 years old. Wiley, where do you get off?
The names are, they're just place markers. After I'm done, I'll change them.
Because it's an act of vanity to write novels about yourself.
Brooke, goddammit, that's a betrayal. You know it happened.
It hurt this family so much, honey. I just can't go through it again. The kids can't. Especially not your son. He is so brave, but he suffers.
What do you mean?
The kids eat him alive. His dad got a rectal probe. You try living that down at the age of 12.
The laughter is the failure, not the book. It happened.
He paused.
It just wasn't what I thought.
There came to him then a feeling, a sort of pull, really, to go back to the office, to sit down. But not after 16 straight hours. He'd be in heart attack country, stroke country.
Thing is, this book, I'm not its author, babes, I'm its prisoner.
You will be responsible, Wiley Dale. You will be.
All right, that's it. I'm going walking. You'll be asleep when I get back, God willing.
If I smell the least trace of cigar smoke, Kelsey's got to have Indian blood the way she follows me and I never see her.
But neither one of us is an Indian, my dear, so how do you explain that?
By the fact that you're 200% hot air and half-baked, she came to him, which are two of the many reasons that I'm so damn crazy about you. She kissed him. He was furious at her, but he kissed her back, and she felt so vulnerable and so Brooke. He held her tight. Noisy, though it was, this marriage was a good fit for Wiley Dale. He needed someone willing to come up the side of his head on occasion, and Brooke had no compunction about that. But he was not going to change any names in any part of the book, this one included.
"You're so nice," he said.
Little feet went scurrying away. Kelsey could be heard whispering, "We have a kiss. God!" Wiley and Brooke managed to swallow their laughter. When he went downstairs, she sort of tried to stop him, but he promised to come back soon. He really did need that air. If he didn't get away from that keyboard and let this thing die down, he'd be up all night. He left the house, glad to enter his familiar woods beneath the familiar starry sky, and that good old moon up there, good old friend. It couldn't be very romantic to have two moons. He sucked the air deep to rid his head of the fog that the writing had invoked. He shuddered. It was a mild night, but he felt cold in his blood. He had lived Martin's sense of suffocation down under the pyramid, had cringed in anguish of terror with him as the blocks smashed down around him, had actually not known whether or not he was going to be annihilated. Creepy enough, but even creepier was the fact that he could still feel Martin's presence, see him, sort of. He was down in Harrow, and things had gone very bad since his visit to the White House just, what was it, 11 or 12 days ago? He was down in Harrow, and he was living in absolutely amazing terror, and Wiley knew that as soon as he returned to his office, he was going to live that terror, too. Thing was, he could sort of see into the lenses. And what he saw there was another parallel Earth, a third one, and it was bad news, real bad. He couldn't see it clearly, but he could feel that it was a fallen world, a real living hell, and it was seeking to escape itself. He could sense its ravening hunger to escape the ruin it had made of itself. Amazingly enough, they'd done even worse than we had.
"They're old," he muttered to himself, returning to one of the lines of thought that he'd been worrying for years.
He thought he might now know the secret of the bizarre creatures he had encountered in these woods a few years back that were the subject of Alien Days. They weren't aliens at all. They were from here. But in their version of Earth, the dinosaurs had never gone extinct. Instead, that dark reptilian brain had grown and evolved and changed until these sleek creatures had come about, tough, brilliant, and utterly heartless. Oh, God! God help the human beings! With our compassion and our softness of spirit, we were not going to be a match for brilliant reptiles, not in Martin's universe or in this one. They were going to take it all. They really, really were. The woods were dead quiet, the early December night touched by just an edge of crispness. As always, he found himself moving along the old forester's path that crossed the top of the little draw where, 5 years ago, almost to the day, he'd noticed that odd light. He stopped, looked down the draw. He had encountered them just there, just 50 feet down. It had looked like an old witch's cottage that he'd never seen before, glowing, infinitely sinister. Curious, thinking maybe he had squatters in his woods, he'd walked up to it, and the next thing he knew, he was grabbed by scaly hands. He was being glared at by the most terrible eyes he had ever seen. He was being manhandled, and yes, the infamous rectal probe had taken place, and then he was on the ground. The little cottage was gone, and there was a crackling electricity in the air. At least, that's what he remembered in his conscious mind. His dreams were a different story. In his dreams, there were towering emotions of loss and longing, and Brooke was involved. But she had sworn that she'd seen nothing that night, heard nothing. He moved up the dark path, shining his light ahead, looking for the cigar cave. A smoke was what he needed. He had a gargle station in the garage, which he'd use before he got in bed with Brooke. Cigar breath, and he'd be on the couch, and he was way too tired for that. He shone his light on the trees that loomed around him, the oaks with their golden leaves, the red maples, the gnarled pitch pines that began to appear as he climbed farther up the ridge. He was maybe 50 yards from the cave when he became aware of a more solid shape up ahead. He stopped, peered into the dark. Matt was on duty tonight, so maybe it was a deer, and yet the form, it looked like a man standing real close to the trunk of that oak. Oh, shit. What if the reptilians knew that he was writing about their invasion and they didn't like it? Hardly daring to do it, his hands shaking so much he could barely manage it, he got the flashlight pointed in the direction of the figure, which did not move. Was it a branch? What was that? He stepped closer. Hello? It leaped out at him. He fell back. He lost the light, and then the figure was on him, glaring down at him, and laughing. God damn it! Oh, man, Wiley! Wiley, oh, Christ, this is rich! It's rich! Wiley got to his feet. You call yourself a cop? Out here wasting taxpayer money like this? What if there's a lost kitten or something down in the town? What will you do? That flashlight! How many batteries in that thing?
A few.
Becca says to me, who's got a searchlight up on the ridge behind the Dale's house? That's what it looks like. I mean, they were concerned over in Holcomb. They thought we had a fire going up this way.
Holcomb is 15 miles from here.
Well, I rest my case.
You saw my flashlight from your house?
Absolutely.
And you got out here in what, 5 minutes? I don't think so. You've been out here for a while because you're raiding the Cubans, you shit.
You're raiding them too, you shit. Otherwise, why would you be out here yourself, bastard? You're the bastard because you can afford the damn things and they're a precious luxury to a poor cop.
I'm hardly rich.
Your kids are in an exclusive private school in KC, not to mention the jeepazine with which you convey them to said school daily. It's moderately customized. TV in a jeep is very frou-frou for rural Kansas, buddy. Look, let's go down to my wife's roadhouse and get hammered. We can take cigars with us. The place is closed. Nobody's gonna know.
Brooke's gonna get suspicious if I stay out here too long. And as far as coming home drunk, that's been done one too many times.
Man, I have to admit I'd like to be pussy-whipped by your ball and chain.
You think?
They began to wander back, both of them planning future cigar raids, hopefully more successful ones. The point was to smoke more than half of the cigars. The guy who did that was the winner. As they reached the ridge that overlooked Wiley's house, he noticed in his office a light. It came, glowed bright, then went. He stopped.
You see that?
Actually, yeah.
Given that my family's asleep, I'm concerned.
The light came again, flickered, and was gone.
Looks like you got a short working in there.
As he scrambled down the ridge to the house, Matt stayed right with him. He was a reprobate, but he was also a dutiful cop. They arrived at the edge of Wiley's yard. His pool stood still and silent. The light flashed bright, and there was a sputtering sound from the open window. They went in through the screen door. Matt dug the fire extinguisher out of the closet while Wiley dashed up to his office. He looked at the desk, at the cords running down behind it. Nothing was sparking.
"So what is it?" Matt asked, coming in.
Could it have been the reptilians, maybe here to wreck the book? They'd broken through before, for sure. Sort of broken through. Matt bent down and brought up a frayed cord. He shook it, and it sparked.
"Sadie do this?"
Their Burmese cat was a notorious cord chewer. "I forgot to close the door."
"She could have burned down your family, buddy."
"Thanks for helping me, Matt." They said their goodbyes, and Matt went clomping off down the stairs. Wiley started to leave the office, but was stopped by sounds that should not be there. Footsteps. Somebody pacing in the bedroom. But Brooke was asleep. He realized that he was hearing Lindy Winters. Their world was not an inch away, not a millimeter. If the physicists were right, they were infinitely close. And yet it would take more energy than existed in both universes together to enable them to make contact. Except, the physicists appeared to be wrong, didn't they? Wiley sat down in his chair. He leaned back and closed his eyes. And when he did, Martin's universe seemed to settle around him, caressing him like a living, complex fog. The lenses were hooks, and they had hooked into Martin's world, and it would not be long before they hooked into this one, too. When he opened his eyes, nearly 2 hours had passed. It was nearly one. He needed to sleep, but he felt kind of sick inside, like somebody in a crashing plane would feel, waiting for the impact. They were coming. That's what this was all about. In the other human world, NASA had announced that UFOs were real. Apparently, that had changed the balance, enabling the reptilians to enter on a tide of belief. So far, that did not seem like anything our NASA was likely to do. Now he understood why the government denied the obvious UFO reality. Somebody down deep in its secret corridors must know that belief counts, that it is the oil in the hinges of the doors between the worlds. He heard another sound, coming in from outside. Metallic. Very faint, though. What was that? It came again, faded again. He went to the window, leaned against the screen, trying to hear more clearly. And there it was again, more distinct this time, and this time he could tell what it was, the unmistakable ringing of church bells. On a good day, you could hear them from out here in the hills. But who would be ringing them at this hour? Matt lived closer to town. Maybe he could hear better. He picked up the phone, then hesitated. It was late, and he was going to make Matt mad. But how could he not? Matt was the police chief and, at the moment, the town's only cop. If somebody was ringing the bell of one of the churches, maybe it was because he couldn't make a call. He dialed, listened.
"Yeah."
"Hey, I wake you up? I sit by the phone all night waiting for you, you stupid fuck. So what in hell do you want? Would you do me the favor of going to your window and tell me what you hear?"
"Course not."
"You're a cop. Aren't you at least curious?"
"Not at all. Good night."
"Matt, Matt!"
And suddenly it wasn't funny. He had to know.
"Yeah?"
"Just do it."
There was a silence. It extended. Eventually, Matt came back.
"Nothing."
"You must have heard something."
"The faint plink of leaves falling. Possibly the snuffling of a possum, or it could have been a coon."
"No church bells?"
"No, but I did hear something connected with church bells, actually, with belfries, bats. in your belfry, squeaking like son of bitches.
Somebody is ringing bells down there, my friend. You wake me up again, I'm going to come out there and cuff your ass and put you in the tank.
The drunk tank's rusted closed. You told me so yourself. For you, I will apply liquid wrench.
Wiley hung up. He flipped on his police scanner and watched the red LED race across the little screen. The scanner emitted a slight burp of static each time it crossed the county sheriff's carrier wave. Lonely sound. Lonely out here. He'd damn well heard those bells. Not in this version of Harrow, Kansas, though. If Matt had heard them, he would have gone down into town to check things out. He was too conscientious to dismiss something as odd as that. At best, it was going to be vandals, but at worst, well, maybe a fire. Who knew? If he could sit down at the laptop, if he dared to do that, he might find out. He turned it on. His hands stirred, moved. His fingers fluttered above the keys. Then they touched them. It was like watching a machine turn on. The hands were not his. His fingers pounded keys, stopped. Then he looked down at what he'd written. The masters of the sky were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them. Was that a quote from the Bible? Or an ancient Hebrew text, maybe? He googled the passage, came up empty. But the masters of the sky had been the Nephilim, creatures who had come out of the air to rape and pillage, who had caused the devastating war portrayed in the ancient Indian Vedas, with their stories of sound-guided missiles, flying saucers, and nuclear bombs. In legend, the coming of the Nephilim had marked the end of the last age, as indeed, according to the ancient Maya, December 21st, 2012 marked the end of this one, the Mayan date 13.0.0.0.0. All the New Age gurus were howling that it was going to completely blow the mind of man. Wiley figured it was another Y2K, when the coming of the year 2000 had been expected to cause an outbreak of chaos, but which had actually been a lot of overhyped nonsense. When he closed his eyes, it seemed as if the office did not have his desk in it. Instead, there were two recliners with reading lights beside them. Where he kept his little TV, they had a bookcase full of science tomes, archaeology, and physics. He saw the books so clearly that he could almost read the titles. The bells were now joined by the long wail of a warning siren. He found himself uttering a prayer for the other Harrow, and all whom she was losing on this night, right here, right now, December 6th, 2012. Near him, he could sense movement. He tried to open his eyes, couldn't. Really tried, could not. He called Brooke, but nothing came out. The room in Martin and Lindy's house became more clear. He could see a woman, Lindy, kind of pretty, scientific-looking, not gorgeous like Brooke. She also had heard the bells ringing and had come in to listen at the window. She was haggard and had a shotgun in her hands, not a good one like his, but rather an old 10-gauge that had seen better days, much better ones. Then he noticed that he was typing. The damnedest thing, he hadn't even realized it. His eyes were closed, but he could hear it, feel it in his fingers. He tried to draw his hands away from the keyboard, couldn't. Lindy, he said. Sweet name. She drew her head back from the window and started out of the room. The phone, in her version of the room, rang. Wiley couldn't see it, but he heard it so clearly that he froze, his fingers stopping just above the keys. He could hear her breathing, gasping almost, between the insistent rings. From down the hall, he heard a murmured sigh as his Brooke tossed and turned. Was she aware, at least dimly, of the sound of Lindy's phone? Lindy put her hand on it. She tightened her grip. Her face reflected a torment that was horrible to see. She picked it up.